Just letting you know, Jason, we're being recorded.
I see that.
Yes. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Pod Stallions, the only show with a guy named Jason and Brian, I think. I think I just introduced us, didn't I?
You did. Yeah, hi, everyone.
You're just doing that.
We're going to have to get our lawyers on that to know for sure that we're the only podcast called with Jason and Brian people.
And make sure that if there is another one, it ends, if you know what
I mean. Get an injunction.
Yes. We're doing another in what we call the Busted TV Pilot Thunderdome. I don't know if we ever came up with a title for this.
Who can make who suffer more?
Yeah, I mean, basically what we do is we each use TV pilots as pool noodles and then whack each other with them.
Exactly.
Yes. Exactly.
After drinking a glass of Kool-Aid that's laced with ketamine.
Yes.
And then watch the thing and hit each other with noodles.
Yes. Yes. Did I tell you that I was at a convention recently and next to it was an anime convention?
Oh boy.
That was doing way better than the toy thing I was at.
Like absolutely.
Just three times the people there. And I was going to the Mego meet thing, and as I walked by, there was just like 500 people hitting each other with foam bats.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, that looks amazing. Like,
yeah.
Like, why am I not doing that? So, yeah, there's some
anime
value in that.
Anime's taken a jump in a way that I never thought. I mean, anime now isn't even what it was 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's really, I don't know when or how it happened, but it suddenly took this giant evolutionary jump where it is bigger than it's ever been in this country. Like mega.
You, sir.
Mega. And, I was just talking about it the other night with Alex. We were talking about, my pitch was, wouldn't it be great if we could get a Battle of the Planets movie, but a period one, like in the mid-70s? Everyone's wearing flares, shoulder-length hair, you know, polo shirts, whatever. And integrate the robots, you know, Seven's Arc 7 and do it like when it took place. I'd want to see that. I want a bunch of long-haired heroes and bad guys.
The Bedhead Trio, or it was not trio, quintet.
Yeah, exactly. it's bigger than ever. But we're not going to be covering anime in this episode.
No, we're not. You're not going to get off that easy. Yeah, we're going to be covering. Well, I guess the theme of our episode could be summed up as space cops.
It oddly just kind of worked out that way. I didn't even think of that when I sent my recommendation. It did.
Oh, really? Because I thought, I see, shots
no,
fired.
I just was thinking of the most insane pilot I could think of. And I bought that on DVD. I bought like the Missing Worlds of Gerry Anderson region 2 DVD years ago, dying to dig into it to see what treasures from Gerry Anderson's brain that we didn't get to have full series of, and that was on there, and it was just like jaw droppingly, what am I watching? So that just came to mind, and then it wasn't until later I went, they're both about cops.
Everything on that disc is like outtakes from a perfect comedy, and you go, yeah, I see why that didn't make. Oh God, yeah.
they're like someone going insane. Yeah. With ideas and putting them to paper, and then you're like, what is going on, you know? And you just, it's like we said before about certain things where you really enjoy an artist or you appreciate stuff.
Oh, sure.
And as years go on, you start to go, did they get bad? Were they always like, what happened? What was the turn? And there was a turn, sadly, for Gerry Anderson with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it had to do with hardship and
because
you've seen that wonderful film. But yeah, we just ended up on two of the strangest attempts to mix science fiction with police work.
Right.
That I'm sure that as this progresses, we're going to find a lot of this.
Now, but, I'm going to say right off the bat that the your pick for me is like, you know, a $200 million film compared to...
Scale-wise,
like compared to what I...
is like an absolute cringe fest.
It is absolutely nonstop cringe.
In the far reaches of our galaxy live the Ikkians, a race of people dedicated to ensuring peace and order throughout the regions of space. To secure their objectives, their police force vigilantly monitors the galaxies, patrolling for criminals who threaten the harmony of their planet and the known universe.
Nonstop, like crickets. Oh. There are so many chunks of time in it that you're like, is somebody going to say something? Is something going to happen in this? And but what I'm fascinated about, how you want to do this.
I think we'll start with my choice.
Okay, so
I chose the 1989 TV pilot Microcops, starring a bunch of people and Peter Scolari and an actor by the name of Brian George, who's best known for like playing Babu on Seinfeld.
He was a
Toronto regular. When I was a kid, he'd be in commercials all the time.
I think there's another kind of recognizable face in there, too. Am I crazy in that? Or is Scolari the biggest face? I forget.
Scolari is the biggest face.
So if I may.
Yes. This,
because I halfway through that pilot, I really started to drift. I started to go into the future in my mind and where my life went wrong in the past and got lightheaded.
I'm sorry about the existential crisis that happened.
Started to lose track of space and time and what the hell this thing was about. But it was about two cops from the future, from another galaxy.
Basically. I think they're aliens, actually.
They're chasing a perp who basically is just kind of speeding. He's not, I don't know if he's like a gearhead or something.
I actually wasn't sure what his crime was, but after spending some time with him, I was like, give me the gun. Give me the gun.
Yeah.
Because it is it's like somebody was like, hey, can we get an imitation of Matt Frewer doing an imitation of Jim Carrey, but not as good?
I think this is a time to recognize that Blade Runner, it doesn't matter if you like it or not, Blade Runner is one of the most influential science fiction films of all time. People are pretty much in agreement. And the world that was created for Blade Runner then sort of splashed over into so many different movies over the years, so many music videos. It really turned something on where everybody kind of went, that's that and Mad Max. Those were the two that everybody started to kind of ape. But at the same time, something about either Roy Batty or the punk aesthetic that was kind of in the punk new wave thing that was kind of in
Blade Runner, it bleeds
into all of this stuff. And what you end up getting is like what you end up getting is the writers thinking the future is going to be nothing but green mohawks and weird jackets and, you know, itchy, jumpy kind of people and, you know, punk like this, like the stuff that, and you see it all the time in science fiction where they think they're putting something in that's edgy for the future. And you realize within 5 years, it's already dated or whatever. And so this guy is like right out of the handbook of, you know, punkish, you know, wacky, like you say, Matt Frewer kind of, you know,
yeah,
buzzing.
But he also could be like the villain in a Jolly Ranchers commercial. Like it is so on 11 plus 11 and,
exactly.
Yeah, and then the other thing I just want to point out is this is also like the very end of the 1980s, and things are starting to get tired and passé. And one of the things I like about this era, this sort of like next generation era, is the outfit design, the uniform design is all over the place.
Yeah.
And these uniforms are just our alien uniforms are just absolutely like bizarre, and
it's like the second worst
I've seen.
It's like if the wardrobe in Buck Rogers from the 25th century was too conservative for you.
Yeah.
Let's crank it up a few notches. And so what I get from it is that he's speeding. I don't think he's, if I recall, he's not like, I think they had a file on him, or he had an outstanding warrant or something, but they start chasing the guy. And then through some convoluted insanity, as happens, they get into our universe, but they're miniaturized.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm watching it, just because I don't think I've ever talked about this before, there was a time where I was developing shows. Like, I was going out and pitching, you know, shows, and then they'd say, oh, we like these characters, you know, for the show, but what if it was a film? And you're like, oh, okay, well, here's a 90-minute script, and here's the thing. And there was one that I was working on with a buddy that was a sci-fi thing called The Infinitesimals, about a fleet, you know, it was riffing on a line in Hitchhikers that comes to the Earth and thinks they're gonna take over the Earth, but they've messed up the scale and they never really figure it out, kind of thing. And so that's kind of what I'm watching, this going, oh, that's kind of the idea. They don't really know or understand where they are, these two cops in their car. But it takes forever to let the audience know they're tiny in a big world, kind of, or for the penny to ever kind of drop. And then it goes off in a weird direction to some fancy party with a caterer and all that. And that's where I started to go, I don't know what's if there. And Scolari's like he was a scientist that was trying to crack something or something.
Yes.
Yes. And again, I'm just going, I don't know what's going on. Like, what happened to the guy they were chasing? Are they ever going to get big? And I just started to kind of drift. But what's fascinating to me about it is then when I looked it up, and you knew this prior to
telling me about it. I want to get into this side topic.
Was that this was, I thought this was a syndicated pilot. I thought this was some private production company doing something for syndication, and it didn't go anywhere.
You know what? You may well, like, you were wise to think that, because it's got that cheap video effect. Like, TNG had, or Superboy had. So, yeah.
And that stuff was getting big at that time.
You
know, like you said, those, you just named those two, and I forget what
Super,
was. Wasn't
there one like Super Force and, there's a few.
I mean,
I don't know
when did Babylon 5 happen? Early 90s? Was that early 90s or something?
I think it was like mid 90s. I remember watching that in an apartment. So that had to be mid 90s.
Okay, so yeah, it had that kind of feel to it. And, you know, knowing it's a pilot and they're not going to go all out with effects and things anyway. But then when I looked it up and saw that it was a CBS pilot, and then I started looking up, because as you told me afterwards, after I looked it up, this was a thing that they would do in the summertime. They would blow through a bunch of pilots to you know, after the shows had run first and then already had their reruns and the summer was really bleak. Hey, we paid for these pilots. Let's throw them up and see if we can get some ratings every Saturday night or whatever it was.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know why this chemistry worked, but first of all, I've always been kind of obsessed with this stuff, and I think this was one of the big deals for me, although I do remember watching pilots back as a littler kid, you know, and I still have some I'm trying to find. But I remember CBS Summer Playhouse figuring out it is what the network executives called garbage dump theater, and I would occasionally tape them. Anything science fiction, and we'll get into a few of them, I'm sure, as we go down the road, or comedy. And it's actually funny. One of the ones I remember really liking was a pilot with Joe Flaherty. He had his own sitcom pilot. He had a sidekick, and I can't quite remember what it was called.
It's funny because I didn't understand until many years later that I always thought a pilot was kind of like people made it. You tried to, you know, sell it to the net, tried to make it go or whatever. Yeah. And then nobody ever saw it. But I realized many years later that we saw a lot of pilots, you know, growing up that we didn't really understand were pilots. I remember one with Jeff Altman was called Gossip. And it aired one time and I've never been able to find it. But I remember the theme tune. And it was about a National Enquirer type rag. And he was the photographer for this rag. And it was another pilot trying to make a star vehicle for Altman. Oh, yeah. And when I moved out here, one of the first things I worked on, like the first year and a half I was in LA, was for this production company. They were making a pilot and starring Jeff Altman, and super nice guy, and very insecure. You know, would always come over to me and go, "Was it funny? Do you think it's funny? Did it work? I can't tell. Is it working? Is it funny?" I'm like, "Yeah, Jeff, you're great." And at one point, I turned to him and said, "Hey, you know, I remember a pilot you did. Did you remember a pilot called Gossip?" And he looked at me like his eyes almost came out of his head. It was like, how did you see that? How on earth? Yeah, I did that. And it was, he knew that, I think it was 1979 or 80 or 81 or something. And it was, I realized until many years later that it was just a pilot that aired one time and mm-hmm. the show never happened. And that's weird. That doesn't happen anymore where they throw up, you know, they throw up pilots.
Yeah, yeah. And I always loved them because it was like this alternate universe, you know,
what
TV yeah. season, like what Rick and Morty do sometimes. Yeah. And I taped a bunch of them. This one, I barely remember. I remember watching it because I used to have a job where I worked in a restaurant. And this was like a summer where, you know, it's like the I have no friends summer. And I think my parents were also away. So, like, I would just come home and tape this.
Those pilots were your friends.
Those pilots.
Hi, everyone. I'm home. What's on tonight? But this, when I looked it up, there
I also
were like,
had the guy on the Ragu bottle. Just saying.
Right. Chef Boyardee came over.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Mrs. Butterworth in the morning. This, and when I looked it up, there were like 30. Like 30 or 35 of these pilots
I've probably seen about 15 of them.
I mean, and a lot of the names. I mean, there were big names in some of these pilots. I think Bruce Dern was in one, maybe. I started reading the synopsis of these things. So it was really an oddity. But this one in particular, you have to admit, it was so convoluted.
Oh, yeah.
That coming in to pitch this thing. Like we'll get to the one I chose, and I'm not. There's no comparison.
But... what you chose gave me an existential crisis, and I have prepared a one man show.
Well, at least what I chose, you could come in and pitch in 30 seconds. What? It's pretty basic. This thing, okay. I don't know how you pitch this show idea. I know what it is.
They went, hey, let's rip off Interspace. And then they were like, yeah, you know what? We got that Newhart guy. We got him in a development deal.
I guess that, yeah,
he's
I guess.
TV but, Martin Short now.
I guess, but even that, what did Interspace do that well?
It was actually a bit of a dud, but I think it did well on video.
Did well enough to rip off the concept, basically.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it did well enough to rip off the concept.
But I mean, why does it have to be some cops from the future? Why does it have to be space cops or whatever they
I
are
guess to,
from another galaxy?
I have no idea.
I mean, that's the part. It almost felt like two shows kind of merging, like two ideas.
No, so it just felt pointless. Like they leave you on a cup. Like, first of all, it never ends.
It's a 90-minute, 30-minute pilot.
Yeah. So, like, please.
Christ.
Like, I've got to confess to you, I sent that to you, watched 20 minutes of it, and went, oh, God. And then tried and tried and tried, and that's like, oh, we're taping tonight? I better watch the end of this. And which I hate watched Your Choice last night and wrote notes in my own blood. But... this one was so painful to get through because they have not decided if this is sci-fi or a comedy.
Or heartfelt about the Scolari character.
Yeah, and then also, like, are the stakes there or not?
Right.
Because the character of the villain, who I think his name is Claude, or Clyde, Clad, I don't care.
Whatever.
Yeah,
Johnny Rockets.
He's just this, you know, VJ type character who's going whoop whoop, and they really must have pitched that like we can sell whoop whoop T-shirts, you know, whoop whoop dolls. It's gonna be Every well, that's kid going to say this on the schoolyard.
That's the bit that's crazy. I mean, you know, I'm constantly making fun of networks and, quote, creatives and development people and so on and so forth to still get the garbage that we get. But this is the kind of thing you go, who at the network thought this was going to
this take, is like a Poochie.
This was going to take hold, you know, that this was going to be.
It's so like, hello, fellow kids. It is. Yeah.
And that makes you just, it makes you wonder, like, well, they're just, they got it. It's like, they got to use this money. Mm-hmm. They got this money for pilots and like, okay, well, we got it. They know damn well it's not going to.
Yeah, but 9 years later, George Lucas would make the Jar Jar mistake, you know, that most people agree with, that, you know, that character was annoying. And this is not that different from Jar Jar Binks.
You mean
as a concept, like,
no, you got to walk me through. You got to walk me through that comparison.
Oh, sorry. I mean, I can't believe this was a concept in 1989. It's a bad one. But then you see in 98, Lucas kind of doubled down on an annoying character like this, thinking catchphrases and all that.
Oh,
thing.
I see. You know,
yeah. I think I'm actually going off of my tangent about how they thought this might be marketable. And that's kind of where the confusion lies.
I see. Well, I always look at Jar Jar as like, never let it be said that Lucas lets go of ideas. Like, like, he thought C-3PO should be a used car dealer, you know, from Brooklyn. And, hey, what's going on? What are you saying? That was his funny idea for the droid. And it wasn't until Anthony Daniels walked in the room that it changed and became what it is. So that was his, you know, sort of judgment way back when. And so to do that, but the CGI aged very rapidly anyway, but I mean, if just in every aspect of that character, and the idea, just every, from design to everything, you just go, nobody ever pushed back and said, maybe make it a bendy robot or something, or make it a, you know, a box with all
make it a mute.
Make it a mute. Yeah, but he just I'll never forget seeing that trailer the very first time, that first teaser trailer that everybody went insane for. And there's that one little shot of him like laser, like lightning goes through his ears and his tongue flaps, and I went, oh boy, uh oh, that's gonna be a problem.
We're way off.
I know. Well, you brought up Jar Jar.
I'm sorry.
But anyway, it's not the worst thing I've ever seen. Let's put it that way. But it's
rough and
it's bad.
And you know what I found funny was the female lead, which that's the other thing, is these people are supposed to be like these aliens are supposed to be like Vulcans almost. They have like no emotions, that sort of thing, and I think you're supposed to, this, the will they won't they between the two
cops
who are stuck in the spaceship together. And it's just like, oh, I don't give a crap about either of these two.
And also what's funny about it is a lot of times you can watch something or an early version of something or, you know, pilots, and you see faces that you go, oh, well, they ended up, that was a guy that ended up on the show for however long. And, oh, she ended up being a secondary character on, ER or something. And then sometimes you just go, I never saw these people again. Like, they just kind of disappeared.
Yes. And in the case of,
it's sobering.
Floyd.
With what? Of who?
Of Cloyd, the bad guy.
Yeah.
I was, not sad that, you know, that was a performance, I'll tell you that. Yeah,
it just, you know, it's scary in a way that you realize there's so many actors,
the lead cop female looked really, really familiar to me. And she's got that very 1980s look about her.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I don't think she had many acting roles, but she's a very well-known model.
And that's another thing. I'm glad you mentioned the 80s, because you realize that, like, every decade, you know, the 70s don't really end until about 82.
Yeah.
I mean, flares are still happening in 80 and 81. The trousers are still kind of flared. The 89, you know, you were still kind of in 86 with the designs and the hair and everything. It didn't really shift until the early 90s, you know, with the, I mean, I watched a thing a few weeks ago of, I found this documentary, this half hour that was from PBS in the Twin Cities in 1994. They took somebody, you know, locally, like an amateur type camera, microphone went out and filmed the Star Trek convention at this, the Minneapolis Convention Center. And I just kind of got lost in it, like, oh yeah, I remember that. And what was funny was when they interviewed people, do you watch the original series? Oh, not really. It's kind of cheesy. I don't really. It was that time when, like, Next Generation was getting bigger in the consciousness than the original series. People are in costume, but nobody uses the word cosplay. But when you looked around, the hair was still like that sprayed up in the front kind of thing, and curly, you know, lots of hairspray, and you're like, God, this is 1994. Was that still kind of I know it's the Midwest, but it's always kind of shocking to me what your impressions are of those periods. And that pilot is very much still kind of mid to mid 80s. And it, by 89, it still felt like
86, 87. I've seen a lot of pilots where you go, oh, that would have been fun as a series or that, but this one, it's like, I just don't care. There's nothing here that I haven't seen before, and I don't know. It doesn't work for me. I mean, the lead is great. I mean, Peter Scolari doesn't disappoint, but he's not giving anything here. And
very underrated actor.
Yeah, you know, I've always thought he did pretty well.
He did. I mean, you know, compared to Tom Hanks, nobody.
Yeah, but well. I mean, I but would also love a works. Decade of work on network television. That'd be okay. Yep. And by the way, I just want to point out that, and this isn't, well, we're going to get off tangent. I was thinking about Newhart because of this. And God, can you think of a show that was more meta at the time than Newhart?
No, and it's funny. Only with distance, I think, do you kind of realize just how subversive it was, because
I was trying to describe an episode to my daughter. It was one where Newhart joins a gang, and I can't remember if his gang is called the Ruffians or if it's the other gang's called the Hooligans, but they're it's all just middle-aged men, and they're wearing like jackets, and they get their jackets misspelled, so the Ruffians say the Puffians and the Hooligans say the Hooligals. And the thing that I always laugh about is there's a knock at the door, the door opens, and a rock comes in, and then they close the door, and it's like, it's a rock, it's a message from the Ruffians. And at the end, they end up playing music and dancing at each other in an alley. Like West Side Story.
It was, on face value, the theme music, the location, it all seemed like this quaint sort of sitcom, but it wasn't.
That show got really weird at the end.
It did. You know? Yeah. It totally did.
And the thing that I thought picked up its mantle later on, and this is getting off topic, was the John Larroquette show.
Which I only saw, I think, a couple of episodes of.
Oh, man, that got absurd.
He's sober and he's
yeah, like, he's at a bus station.
Yeah, yeah. But, and then, of course, Newhart's finale is one of the greatest.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I just hadn't, like, appreciated how good that show was, how good Scolari was in it, getting back to our topic, and how this is definitely, like, actually, it's kind of sad. I know he went on to better things, but this is not the thing to hit your ride to.
In fact, speaking of Newhart, do you remember the guy that was on before Scolari? The guy that had dark hair.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
a liar. He always lied. Like whatever, you know, he And he was just kind of had a smart way, kind of a quippy kind of thing. Yeah, Bob, sure. Sounds like a great idea. I'll go do that. You know, he was kind of a jerk. And
did he say dick?
And I don't know what happened to him or why he, if he made it through one or two seasons and then Scolari showed up, or one season and then Scolari. But like, he had a great, I'll never forget this line, and I've used it since, where he was supposed to bring champagne to the party. And someone said, like, what, where's the champagne? You forgot, didn't you? No, I didn't. I had it, and I had to christen a ship on the way over. And he would make up things like that, just big fat lies. And he was a great character, and they must have revamped it or something, and then brought in Scolari as the preppy kind of boyfriend to talk like this all the time.
And yeah, that's a great cast. I'm actually, you know what? I haven't seen the show in so long. I don't know where to find it, but that, you know, I mean, you can't mention Peter Scolari without thinking of the show, I guess.
Yes, or you know, Bosom Buddies, which you know, two seasons of that show. You know,
was there two?
Two seasons of that show. I think it did very, very well. And
I thought actually it was in syndication at one point too.
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. I haven't seen that. I watched it.
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely was, because I watched it in college. And a couple of the girls were body shaming the women on the show in my dorm room. And I remember like going, oh, that's harsh. And so that's why that's rooted. So it definitely at least aired in the Toronto area.
And she passed away. Wendy, what was her name? Spurberry?
Wendy Jo Sperber. And they weren't body shaming her. They were body shaming Donna Dixon.
Donna Dixon?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That was like, what?
Yeah, that's when everything's, well, any kind of body shaming is effed up, but that's messed up. But anyway, but I watched that show religiously. And what I remember most was the theme, the Billy Joel thing. And even as a kid kind of going, that's not Billy Joel. Who is that? How didn't they? Why didn't they just get Billy Joel? Why didn't they get someone else to cover the song? But anyway, speaking of things,
hey, and that uncovers the thing of like, remember Knight Rider? They play Girls Just Want to Have Fun, but it wasn't sung by Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, it was rampant on NBC.
Oh, and so brutal.
And on Simon & Simon and CBS shows. But NBC was the worst culprit. They were always and it happened post Miami Vice too. That's what, again, going off on a tangent, one of the things that made Miami Vice so brilliant, the first two seasons especially, it is an unbelievable show, one of the most expensive shows the network ever did. There weren't shows that were using the actual tracks. It was never allowed. And the budget, you know, skyrocketed with some of those. And then before long, all the labels and the artists are going, hey, we want to be in the show.
Yeah.
They started making better deals. But still, you even after 84 in Miami Vice, you didn't find other shows that were using, you know, the original tracks. They were still doing these shitty.
Yeah. And that
shitty covers.
Such a, like, that's how a lot of blaxploitation films got the word out, as they released the soundtrack first. The soundtrack would be a hit, and then the film comes out.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, these things go together. And it's funny that you short somebody the authentic experience. It's weird.
It was just, I never understood it till many years later, when I understood licensing and all that, and how much those things cost. That's what made Miami Vice real. And I even remember the pilot of Miami Vice and hearing a couple of songs, but especially In the Air Tonight, and going, that's the real, like, my mind had already been trained at that point to expect a cover version. When I heard it, I my mind was blown that I was hearing Phil Collins in a TV show. So I called NBC the next morning. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. But speaking of things that you'll never need to see again, let's move on to the pilot that I picked for you.
Yeah. Okay. You chose was it Space Police?
Thank you. Emergency over, Lieutenant. Another false alarm.
SPA, I'll head on downtown. I'm Brogan, Lieutenant Brogan. For 15 years, I worked for the NYPD, New York Police Department. Now I'm with Space Police.
Space Police.
Space Police.
All the Space Police.
Something I remember enthusiastically reading in the SIG fanzines that I used to buy at Dragon Lady Comics on Queen Street.
SIG. Supermanation is go.
Yeah, and I was a fan mainly of the live-action Jerry Anderson stuff. You know, that was my passport into it, and the puppetry was something I admired, and I like a couple of the shows, like Captain Scarlet, but I was excited about this concept of a new live-action series from Jerry Anderson, and I was aware at the time that he had done, you know, a new puppet show called Terra Hawks. You're familiar with Terra Hawks?
Again, not only years after it sort of hit the UK. No, here's what I remember of Terra Hawks. Those catalogs that I used to get for model kits.
Yeah.
And a lot of them came from Japan. And then, of course, the occasional photo in Starlog of something from Terra Hawks or something. Or Jerry, you know, it was that. And it was like that. Remember that model kit that was Jerry Anderson's space?
Yeah, Star Cruiser 1, I think Star it is. Cruiser it's just 1. Something that was, like, designed.
The names started to pop more and more for me to understand. I mean, I think I first understood he was the guy that did Space 1999 before catching on to all the other stuff. But I didn't see Terra Hawks for, you know, years and years and years after it aired with Kate Kestrel and who's the witch? What's the witch called? Zelda or something?
I think it's Zelda.
Zelda.
I bought the Terra Hawks annual, a set of the action figures before I saw the show.
And those were done by Bandai?
Bandai. In fact, they're actually the same buck, if you will, as the Poppy World Heroes that I like, the 3 3/4 inch, you know, 5 points of articulation.
They're nice.
Ultraman figures. Yeah, they are nice. And nice. I liked all that stuff. And I even bought a display of the candy. The candy came to a local shop near my house. And I was like, how much for the whole display? And the guy's like, $5. And he thought I was weird. But we used to get British imports like that.
Yeah.
And
the Zeroid. Wasn't there like there was an action Zeroid that somebody made in a...
Yeah,
And the ship. I guess the ship models
were really cool. Yeah, they did beautiful. And then I saw the show.
Oof.
I traded tapes, and it was like, oh no, I don't like this.
It's insane.
No offense to anyone who like.
No.
If you're like seven, and yeah, I get it.
And the Kate Kestrel music video is a thing of beauty. That find that on YouTube, everybody, and watch that the single that got released.
Warning, not safe for work.
Oh my!
Terra Hawks to me, and we need this context right now. Felt derivative. That was when Jerry Anderson was like at his lowest point, and he made partners with a guy named Christopher Burr. And I can't quite remember how the relationship was, but I didn't like the output of this era, like personally.
You know,
It all felt wrong-headed. And the thing that really bugged me is I understand Jerry Anderson was like any innovator. Puppets were a means to an end, but if there was a new way to do things, he'd do it.
Right.
You know, like I feel that a lot of people say that about Henson. They'd say, oh no, he'd be doing CGI. And I get it. It's just, you know, the different materials. But with this, I felt that there was in between, you know, Anderson's kind of like decline in output and his legal troubles. there was a British, there was a TV series made in Japan that was sort of derivative of Anderson called X-Bomber.
Oh, and, yeah.
Starfleet.
Starfleet
was basically a very, I found a very stylized, it's almost like it's a complete marriage of the two influences, I think.
Yeah, it is. I've got the Region 2 box
set. Oh, yeah. I love that series. And
I like
and
the design of the
May
face.
Video.
Yeah, I like the design. Because the thing about Terrorhawks, too, is like, you know, the beauty of his puppet stuff in the 60s is that each subsequent show, the puppets got more and more accurate. They got more and more detailed. So when you go from, you know, Supercar to Captain Scarlet, they're incredible. And the mouths are moving in sync with the actor off, you know, off stage kind of. And they look more, they're not exaggerated. The heads aren't bigger. The hands aren't bigger kind of thing. You still have those close-ups of human hands moving stuff that are inserts. And Joe 90 really refined it even more after
Captain
Scarlet. But then something happens with the Terrorhawks thing where we go back to the bigger features and the bigger heads. And
I felt like Starfleet was a big hit in the UK.
Yeah.
And of course it even inspired Brian May.
Oh yeah.
To cover the theme tune in what I consider one of the most, I just love that song. It is just a brilliant song.
He was in Queen.
Was he?
Yeah. He was one of the guys that was in Queen.
Did he know Freddie Mercury?
They worked together briefly.
Wow.
But Starfleet's really what he's known for.
Thanks. I've never
that and his hair. And his hair.
Yes.
That's the only mark he made. But it's a great tune. And he put out that isn't it like he just put out like a box set.
Yeah.
17 different versions of the song and all the stuff he did with Eddie Van Halen and all that and this big deluxe box set, which I'm sure our pal Rockford J, who's listening, has, because he's the king of Queen, if you will. But
it's a good Guar song, by the way.
Right.
No, that's King of Queens. Sorry. Yeah.
But it becomes derivative, and they get weird again. And clearly, he's making more and more pilots at this point, and he's trying to get something else up and running. And so he and Burr come up with, what's it called again? Space Police? Space Police?
The fact that we both are struggling.
I know. Well, because it's confusing, because it ended up getting made into a show called Space Precinct, and we'll get
Space
to that in
Precinct.
A minute.
Oh, boy, will we.
Oh, yes, but I think you might be surprised about some of the details about Space Precinct. It might kind of knock you out. So this pilot was made in 1986. I know very little about it, other than our pal and yours, Shane Rimmer. Who would you get if you wanted to sell your pilot and get a handsome leading man, action man, to be the lead cop, Lieutenant Brogan, or Captain Lieutenant, whatever he is?
Well, no, I think they wanted a hard boiled, you know,
they didn't get
stereotype
hard or boiled.
Yeah, but it is really like they wanted to pluck a 1930s police captain.
Right, but you but you needed one who didn't look like he sat behind a desk the last 20 years.
And that's you didn't need a 5'6".
Well, again, I don't want to bash Mr. Rimmer, because
we love him
for many reasons. Not least of which is his name. That's one of the greatest names in all of acting.
Never mentioned that.
But I get why Jerry would have said, "Hey, listen, I'm doing this pilot. Can you do me a favor? Can you come in and do the thing?"
I would pray that it wasn't like Ed Bishop's busy. Because he's so much better for this role.
It could have been Ed Bishop could have been doing well with commercials and stuff and didn't really need. But here's the other, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what the thinking was or how it happened, but it's that pilot is held together with masking tape. I mean, the budget on that thing is so ridiculous. And elements of it make their way into Space Precinct. But basically, this is a cop show. It's at the Anderson. What was the guy's name? Christopher Burr. And by the way, they not only created the show and wrote it, they did the theme. They did the music and the theme music too. Jerry Anderson and Christopher Burr did the music, which sounds like they woke up, rolled over onto a Casio, hit the drum thing, and then they farted out a theme.
But now I want to see like a music video of like Jerry Anderson with a headband and a Casio.
Wearing a vest, wristbands. But it's the
Burr guy like giving him the thumbs up.
The again, clearly you're seeing this thing and you're going, this is such a mishmash of so many things that Anderson did before. You've got the live action cop, you know, Rogan. You've got the live action woman who he's with in the precinct. You've got the bad guys that are they're puppets, but they're not marionettes. They're like, there's one that's like a Sydney Greenstreet type. There, and clearly it's like a Maltese Falcon thing, and then the little Peter Lorre, the little Peter Lorre one that's like his sidekick, and then you've got these other two that are like bounty hunters.
Wait, that was Peter Lorre.
You've got these other two that are like bounty hunters, and one is like a robot wearing a trilby, and the other one's got like a dinosaur head, and they seem to be stop motion in their scenes.
Yeah, this is
so it's all over.
I'm having a problem with evaluating this is like if how this was presented. This is 1987. Is this a predate Adult Swim? Do you know what I mean?
No.
I just wonder if Joel Hodgson made something like this, if I wouldn't go like, yeah, that's pretty awesome, dude. But
oh no, you're asking if it's a piss take.
Well, yeah, what I'm trying to say is when I look at it, I think it's horrible.
Well, it is.
Because my expectations of Jerry Anderson is, you know, it's straightforward. And this is such a, like, what is this? Is it,
but,
like,
but it's,
there's
but
no
it's
in, stakes to anything.
But it's also indicative of where he was at the time and the desperation. And oh. I wouldn't be surprised if he put this thing together himself. I don't know what his finances were like at the time and what the ITC license, you know, what the ownership was of those things, the divorce, whatever. So this thing is, you know, this is the best we can do right now for this. And hopefully somebody will be attracted to the concept and will revamp it down the road.
But, yeah, you know, that's the
I don't think the intent was we got to make a star vehicle for Shane Rimmer. Shane Rimmer's going to be on lunchboxes. There's going to be dolls and lunchboxes of Shane all over the UK.
Yeah, except that almost less than 10 years later, there were dolls and lunchboxes from the guy from Knott's Landing. You know who's I get it, but
it's apples and oranges, man. When you see an I don't know if you've ever seen any Space Precinct, but it is apples and oranges from 86 to 94. Space Precinct ends up being the most expensive British series ever made. They film it at Pinewood. It's $1 million an episode, that show. Yeah. It was, I mean, again, I'm not saying that it looks like
film that $1 million.
I'm not saying it looks like it or it's good, but he got a big freaking budget for this live action animatronic puppet kind of thing. The one in 86, the puppets, they are so insanely bad. I mean, worse than Terrahawks bad, these puppets.
Well, I gotta say, my wife and daughter walked in on me watching it with this, you know, what basically looks like a Hello Kitty porno.
And then there's the other cops in the precinct that are wearing cat heads.
Yes. So that's an animatronic head. And you know, it's a big difference. When Alf walks around, you can tell that's just a guy in a suit, not the puppet.
Well, I don't think you see Shane and the cat people and the other young woman who's in the precinct. I don't think you ever see them in shot with Sydney Greenstreet and Peter Lorre. They're never,
no,
it's not the same scale. So So the cat people are there. These poor actors wearing these cat heads. But that ends up splashing over into Space Precinct, where they've got this. Every one of those heads, so those, the creature, the people in the precinct, these alien heads, they had five or six people on set doing the animatronics of the eyes and the mouth. And, you know, it was really high tech for the time for something like that. And you know, the effects aren't terrible. But again, it's 1994 and it's, I think it only had like 25 episodes or something. But I think the things that are taken over into the show are Brogan as a character who's also carrying like a 45 Magnum. Everyone else has laser guns. And he's like, I'm not using that technology crap. I'm going to, you know, use an old gun. And the animatronic heads. I don't know if puppetry came into Space Precinct. I haven't seen all the episodes or not, but you watch this thing and it just reeks of desperation and flailing, trying to get something to stick.
Yeah, I think it's just like the production values are just that one side hipster for me. Do you know what I mean? Like
you're saying, if I'm getting this right, is that somebody, if you didn't know better, if you plop that down in front of somebody that had no idea who Gerry Anderson was or what this was,
or if you slapped
you'd be forgiven for thinking that somebody was making an homage or doing a piss take.
There's a show I think that Chris Elliott does called Eagle Heart or something.
Right.
It's a riff. It's ironic. It's, you know, and that was actually the conflict I had with myself, is like, you cheer for this crap under the right circumstances.
Well, it's like a bad movie. It's like, it's like, you know, when suddenly you turn, you know, like Showgirls becomes like, it's a cult thing. Cause it's, so it's like nobody making it thought they were making a cult movie or a crappy thing. They really invested in that and the script, and they were totally serious. Ed Wood was completely serious about what he was doing. He thought he was making great stuff. That's very different than winking and knowingly, you know, pointing out the flaws and the cracks and the outfit and so on. We've kind of been inundated with that shit ever since Heat Vision and Jack. It's been nonstop, you know, riffing on that sort of thing. And sometimes it's done really, really well. Sometimes it's done, you know, kind of half-assed, and sometimes it tries too hard and it doesn't work. But we've gotten a lot of it the last 20 years. The ironic, knowingly. Doesn't that feel like an exploitation film from the, you know, I was talking about.
You know what? I just was watching. I was talking to my wife about this while watching Shark Side of the Moon.
Okay, I don't know what that is.
You know what? You go to Tubi. You've heard of Tubi? It looks like it was filmed in a couple of days, but the production.
Like a Sharknado kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That whole empire.
What killed me about it was
civilization, as far as I'm concerned.
Just killed me about it though was, and just bear with me because it was funny. There's a spaceship crew going to the moon because there's monsters, Nazi sharks on there. Of course there is, and we're as a society. It's 2024. And we're still using gaming chairs on the bridge of the spaceship. You know? And it's like, we were doing the office chair thing. I think at SCTV, they once used like a laser place. Like, they're still doing this.
But again, they know they're doing it. When you name it Shark Side of the Moon or Sharknado, whatever.
You've entered
into this campy universe of everybody being in on the thing, and that's a far cry from, say, you know, stuff that we've admired over the years that you go, boy, they're really going for like a giallo thing here with this, and it really, like, there was that, what's that one called, the, I think it's called The Editor. It's an homage to giallo, and the guy did it so well, but then it kind of went goofy, and you go, okay, now you're kind of poking fun at the genre. But if you do it well, I was saying this to someone the other day because I saw the trailer for the new Roadhouse, a remake that nobody ever thought But I saw Roadhouse like on VHS, you know, a million years ago. And then it was streaming somewhere. And I went, okay, I'm gonna watch it again. And
it's so good.
It's not terrible. It's not a terrible movie. But you know, as I'm watching it, I'm going, if this was made in the 70s, this is an exploitation flick.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It 100%. Is 100% a Billy Jack low budget exploitation flick that somehow made its way to the late 80s.
Yeah.
And got on Patrick Swayze's desk. But see, I think they knew that. I'm watching it going, they know what they're doing. They know they're winking at a kind of drive-in sort of trash that was made in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And for that, they did it well. I don't remember it being as dark as it was. Like some of the moments in it are like, you go, whoa, 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 what did he just do? And you got to like rewind it. Like he just ripped that guy's fucking throat out. What the fuck? Well, how'd that happen? You know? So that's an example to me of like, yeah, nobody really seems to talk about it, but that seems to be what that thing is. They're doing a bit of an homage kind of, but this thing, again, if you put this in front of anybody that's got the awareness of all those things you're talking about in Rick and Morty and whatever else, you'd be forgiven for thinking that someone just put it together a couple of months ago and was making fun of a type of genre.
I was just kind of perplexed because I also know that I think Anderson is, you know, whole assing this. You're kind of like, whoa, because there's nothing, there's no environment here. You have nothing to grab onto. You have cartoonishly bad lead. Shane Rimmer, great in small doses.
How dare you?
And then you have.
He also looks like he's been wearing that shirt for weeks. Wore it to the canteen to eat. You know, fell asleep in it last night. Like by the time you're done with the pilot, it's got stains on it, and it's.
I'm Method Jerry.
Unbuttoned to the waist. He's not wearing a tie. It's like what the.
And nothing says New York than the guy who. I think he's from the Manitoba.
That's right. And but there's something kind of charming going, oh, this is, you know, God, how long has he known Jerry Anderson at this point?
Oh, yeah.
Doing voices and stuff. He also reminds me
of those documentaries that they, you know, they did. They're kind of Shane Rimmer, because he always narrated that stuff.
Yes, 100%. Like that voice was so recognizable. And the what I loved were the puppets that were the president and his aide, and they all look like kind of like raisins, like their neck looks like a raisin, and they kind of have a teardrop shaped
and they have the ability to not express any emotion,
nothing, just and it you all you're looking at is there's a hand inside that mouth making that foam you know move. It's shockingly bad. It's shockingly bad.
And then you have like this wonderful idea of this like floating landmass, this domed city.
Yes.
And you're like, oh my God, the artistry. Like this is not half-assed.
Yeah.
It's just wrong-headed.
That's right.
And I mean, like some of the stuff you can honestly see the poster board and the glue. Especially like the glittery doors.
There's a shot when he's talking to Sidney Greenstreet. I forget the name of the villain, but when Rimmer's talking to him through his computer.
Oh yeah.
He says, "Yeah, we're not playing
like the Inspector Gadget voiced guy, like, oh Gadget, you know, like,
do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
we're going to kill the president and crash the train. He's like, I'm calling your bluff. Forget it. I'm calling your bluff. And they cut between them. The Sidney Greenstreet guy literally stuck stereos behind him. There's like. Five or six different stereo. You can see that. You can see a bit where the cassette goes in. And the knob. It's a bunch of black.
It's futuristic technology.
I'm coming to you from a home appliance store right now. I can't get away.
I feed here.
Here's the fascinating thing in the timeline, and this is what I think happened when. Thunderbirds came back in 92, 93 or so. Suddenly it started getting broadcast again, and it's a smash. They can't believe the ratings it's getting in the U.S. This is in the UK. And then Matchbox gets the license and makes diecasts and larger vehicles and Tracy Island.
I remember that. Yeah, very, very well, actually.
Tracy Island is so popular that they don't have enough for Christmas time. Everything's on back order. Nobody can get Tracy Island for any of their kids for Christmas. So Blue Peter, I think, did an episode where they said, you can make your own Tracy Island. And they did a whole thing. And it becomes a phenomenon again. And it happens again in 2001 or so when they bring it back again. And there's all that other merchandise made by licensed by Carlton. And I think it's Vivid Imaginations, maybe, who did the Matchbox, did the Thunderbird stuff.
Matchbox did Stingray as well.
Matchbox did Stingray and the Stingray figures, and then Thunderbirds, and then Vivid Imaginations came in.
Did Captain Scarlet, I think.
Captain Scarlet and Joe 90.
Joe
90 doll, and then I've got the briefcase, the three-way opening briefcase, which sounds disgusting, I know, but. And then a pistol and an ID and glasses and all that stuff. But then in 2000, I think, I forget the company, gets Thunderbirds again. Oh, I've got the large Vivid Imaginations Captain Scarlet that talks with a hat that has a little microphone that swings on. And you know what? It still talks. I've never changed the battery.
Can't shut him up.
From 1993, battery still, he still talks. I swear to God. So I think what happened was when Thunderbirds came back in 92 or 93 and all that merchandise went crazy and a whole new generation of kids were into it and Dire Straits made a video for Calling Elvis that had puppets and stuff. That's when he went, hey, wait a minute. I've got this Space Precinct thing or Space Police. Maybe I can go. And that must be when whoever came up with the bread for this Space Precinct thing said, Gerry Anderson's hot right now. Let's get on a brand new show.
Sure. And more power to him. I was happy he had this. Yeah. I just did not fall in love with this. And I tried. And
Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. You're talking Space Precinct or you're talking?
Oh, yeah. I can't.
The pilot.
This pilot can go to hell because it is so cartoonishly broad. Everyone is a cartoon. So who are you? It feels they're trying to make something gritty with a Croft kind of conceptualization
It doesn't know what the tone is either. Yeah. It doesn't know what it's trying to do here.
Yeah. And you can't grasp it. And then you're just kind of like giving it the finger. You're admiring like, okay, that was, you know, that was a really cool effect. I like what they're trying to do here.
Yeah, they're
except
trying
nothing to has any stakes. I don't care about, you know, hand puppets on a train. And also, do you just want to point out the irony that like the two Shane Rimmer performances we've talked about in the show both revolve around him not getting monorails crashed?
Batman Begins. That scene in Batman Begins is an homage to this pilot.
Yes, exactly. We are through the looking glass.
Christopher Nolan, this pilot is one of Christopher Nolan's favorite things of all time.
Yes. And
he had to work that into the script somehow to get, and then get Shane Rimmer, who.
Yeah, aren't the villains like named like V-Lon and Eval?
Yeah, and the robot, the little robot in the office has got like serves coffee and it's got a big round. It's called Slow-Mo.
Yeah, I just wanted to smash.
So the two things that make it into Space Precinct are Brogan and that slow-mo guy. That it's redesigned, but it ends up in the show. But again, as a concept, if you're going into pitch, it's like, you know how popular cop shows are and how everybody's doing it. This is a New York kind of gritty cop thing, but in space. And everybody walks around and they got cat heads and weird things or whatever. You go, yeah, that's not a bad idea. You're taking a trope and you're subverting it a bit, and yeah, makes sense. Go to it, Gerry. Here's $20. Make a pilot. Go and do it. You know, and so, but Space Precinct ends up being, I think at the time, the most expensive British series ever made.
Yeah, and it doesn't show on screen.
No, and also Vivid then made a shit ton of toys.
Yeah, I saw those in like CVS's in the United States.
No, see, it's funny because the first time I saw them was like in a dollar store. They flooded these dollar stores. This was in the Twin Cities.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't even know what this show was. And then I would find these figures and go, what the hell is it? And I'd say, Gerry Anderson's. I was like, Gerry Anderson's got a new show? And there was like a cop car and I think a couple of different vehicles and then like 10 or 12 figures that were,
yeah,
that were made by Vivid, yeah, the same company who did the Captain Scarlet ones.
Mm-hmm. I could not get behind it. I tried. I watched. You know, at that time, I was really into my like Space 1999 and UFO because I was getting them on like Laserdisc, and I was able to actually watch the episodes, and I was collecting pretty hard. And yeah, I just couldn't bear that show.
I think I've only ever seen maybe three episodes or so of that.
Yeah. You know,
and there's a, what's weird about it is there's a lot of faces that pop into it.
Oh yeah, I think we Idris Elba.
I think it's one of the first things he's ever done. I think because I remember reading, either, I don't know why that rings, but like Ray Winston and Stephen Burkoff and just lots of familiar British faces.
Yeah.
The guy whose name I always forget, but he's in everything. But he was the guy in Batman, the two thugs at the beginning that robbed the.
Oh, robbed, I know who you're talking about. He's also in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
And,
he's in it.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the first Anderson shows to get a DVD release of some kind, I think.
Yeah, I mean.
But I mean, from humble beginnings of this thing that you say can go to hell, this pilot that can go to hell.
Yeah.
That's Brian's review. It's astonishing that it somehow got regurgitated.
Well, the jokes are all, nothing lands.
Nothing.
And then there's no tension because you're like, it's all just puppets on a model train. Like, I think the beauty of Gerry Anderson was it's either an all puppet world and you can accept the effects and then the stakes become apparent.
Right.
Or it's a live action world, but we use the model world sparingly, so the effects work with the drama.
That's why I think UFO, is 10 times the show that Space 1999.
I agree, because for the same reason.
It's the perfect marriage. It's like, okay, we're doing live action. You know, everyone does their thing. That some of them emote more than others. But the beauty of it is all the experience that you'd had building cities and building vehicles and having chases and so on, you could bring into certain shots in the, you know, in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, that to me is the perfect kind of marriage of that stuff.
Yeah, but when you try to merge puppets with models and people,
yeah,
it just can be this kind of like soup that doesn't work or you know, doesn't taste good. Like, I don't know what to say.
Shane should have been the captain. Shane should have been the police captain that's in the office.
Yeah.
Comes out and yells at the two rookies or something and finds some unknown dude.
Like that terrible Dick Tracy cartoon where he would just go, hey, racist stereotype.
Yeah, the one with Jiu-Jitsu and
but yeah, you know what I mean, like, and then you know what you're making a show No Child Asked For or Heard. But that's the other thing, is like who's the market for this? Because, and I felt the same way about Space Precinct. It was like,
because it got very violent, didn't it? Space Precinct had a lot of violence.
It was too edgy for kids and too lame for Gen Xers like me. Like, I looked at it and went, like, the cars were like, you know, like you're in your basement with two toys going, you know.
Just remember seeing picking up that figure at the dollar store,
yeah,
of Brogan and going, is that the guy from Knott's Landing? Like the fifth or eighth down the cast list of Knott's Landing? Is that the guy? You know, Ted Shackelford. And I don't know if he'd ever done anything since Space Precinct. But it just...
Could also get a 12-inch Ted Shackelford.
That's right. They made 12-inch figures too. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
And it was just like another, like, Vivid Imaginations and Daypool were such, like, thanks for making what I like, but why'd you have to make them so terribly?
Well, the Joe 90 doll is very good. There's not a lot of articulation in the 12-inch dolls. The Captain Scarlet's brilliant with the gun. You know, it's only like 5 points of articulation, but the voice is fantastic. You know,
I just found their figures.
SIG, like, I'm blocky. All right. Who?
Their figures blocky.
Well, the smaller Vivid ones, the Captain Scarlet ones, and they had the articulation in the knee. That the Matchbox ones are wonderful. I've got the Stingray set, and I used to have all the stuff. I actually had a diecast set that was exclusive from the Radio Times that I knew someone in the UK that had hooked me up with in the early 90s. And many years later, around Christmas time, I gifted it to Joel Hodgson because he liked a lot of that stuff and a lot of the Gerry Anderson stuff. And he's got that in his collection. Back in, I want to say the late 90s or so. So, and I'd like it back, Joel.
If you're listening, Joel. I'd
like to get it back. But there you go. So there's, I don't know if any of this, we should have paused it at the beginning and said, go watch these two pilots and then come back.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to think maybe that's what I'll do. I'll for YouTube, I'm trying to figure out what I want to do, if I want to show some clips and just us talking about it, or I don't know. Because these are really strange shows.
Oh, yeah.
And we're not doing them justice. I mean, honestly, there's some stuff going on in Space Police that's just... Oh.
It's, but you just, you all, you know, when you see a scene with him and the cat lady.
Yeah.
And they're meeting with the president, you just realize that you never for a second believe they're on set together, because mm-hmm. they're never in shot together. And you just realize that Shane and this poor woman with a cat head on are sitting blind to nothing.
Super hot cat head.
You know, and that's the other thing, is the cat heads look like, they don't look like higher tech, more realistic looking cats. They look like anime, cartoony cat heads. That's the other thing that's weird. You know, they don't
look... Yeah, no, I when I was watching this, my wife and daughter came in.
Yeah, so I heard.
Yes.
So I heard. They probably thought, what are you... Oh, it's just...
this isn't what it looks like.
Some kind of fetish porn that you're watching? yeah, well, but again, you just think of that and you go, well, why didn't you just cast actors and apply, you know, cat-like makeup with a wig and teeth or something? Why did you decide to go with these fluffy cat heads that just look insane?
Yeah, they just don't give you anything to identify with, and I felt that about Space Precinct as well. They hadn't learned from that. They created these much better articulated heads that still felt like the one step to Chuck E. Cheese, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And I remember just like going like, why is this so cartoonish? And I mean that in everything, in the design, like. Why do they look like New York police officers in space?
Yeah, why are they wearing the blue and the black and
yeah, it's like.
Well, and also it also has the Gerry Anderson kind of trademark in a lot of his stuff of having everybody kind of talk like this. Hey, come on over here. We got to get at the, you know. So you've got a bunch of British actors most likely in the doing the voice work, and he always has them do American accent, not Shackelford, obviously, but. You know, I don't know. I would guess the bulk of that cast was British, and it's always with American doing American kind of New York kind of accents and thinking of an international audience. I don't know if that show even aired. Did it ever air in the U.S. Space Precinct?
Yeah, I actually saw it on. I had one of those illegal satellite setups where I pretended I lived in Buffalo, New York, and I would pay. And you could see stuff like that. But I definitely watched Space Precinct. It aired in Canada as well.
The people that monitor your home are going to go, that's it. He just said it. Go get him.
Yeah.
I knew he did illegal shit back then. Go get him. Bootlegging the cable.
Maybe,
finally.
Maybe he had to see his Justice League cartoons. I never saw it.
I certainly
never
saw it.
I remember actually watching it. Maybe it was on Canada's Space Channel in the 90s, but I can remember watching it and just like going, oh, I don't know, man.
Is that the one channel that ran the documentary about the Starfleet in space, the Star Trek show? The docuseries that you loved?
The docuseries I loved.
Yeah, because you thought Star Trek was real.
Thanks.
Sorry.
Wow, I just fell right into that.
Sorry, like, I couldn't help it. You said the Space Channel in Canada. I thought I couldn't help it. I'm sorry. It's never getting old. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, no, it's you're right to mock me. I'm fine with that. It's not one of my brighter moments, but it's
you
not
were
even.
Kid.
It's,
you were a kid.
Yeah, but it's you know what, dude? There's so much worse.
Exactly.
So much worse.
Exactly.
I'm just never gonna share.
Exactly. Probably for the best.
Take it to the grave, Brian.
Probably for the best.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So there you go. I think in this case, if this was being rated on a grade scale or a contest of some kind, I think I would win in the shitty stakes of this.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, but I mean,
your one is insane.
That begrudgingly.
You say yours is insane and tough to get through and horrendous effects and annoying characters and voices and things. But this one is one you're almost embarrassed to be watching because you start to feel bad. I started to feel bad for Shane Rimmer in this.
You poor man.
You want to just
an army blanket.
You just want to say to him, like, you know, if this goes, you're never going to be in the show.
Yeah.
You do know that, you know, and he's barely, I mean, he also seemed a lot older than I thought he would have been by 86, 87. He seemed to,
yeah,
maybe I forget how old he is and how old he was in Batman Begins.
I just want to picture him answering the phone. You know, it's like, hello, it's Jerry. He's like, Ed Bishop busy? Please let
that... Am I your first call, Jerry?
Yeah. That
was a lie.
Bishop, wasn't it?
Not gonna lie, Rimmer. My good pal Rimmer. You're not the first call. I did go to Bishop.
Before we end, I do want to say one thing, because from our last episode, I think I maybe sent a really bad message about Paul Giamatti. Several
you getting
people.
Hate mail?
No, nothing of the sort.
Oh.
But thank God. Just people like kind of making little comments like, I don't, oh, sorry, Brian, I know you don't like Paul Giamatti. And it was like, ooh, I maybe kind of overextended what I was trying to say is, so I wanted to bring up American Splendor, a movie where I personally think he pretty much became Harvey Pekar, and I bought him as Harvey Pekar.
Okay.
Just because.
Feel better? You feel better now?
Well, no, I'm just trying to even out.
Well, I think you did say he makes your skin crawl or something like that.
There's just
like something
about a lot of his performances that do.
Yeah.
And in American Splendor, I just completely bought him.
Well, as long as we're back on Giamatti, I'm going to recommend The Leftovers, or The Holdovers, sorry. I'm going to recommend that again to everybody. But I'm going to recommend another film, and maybe you've never seen it. And it's a little indie kind of gem from around 98. That not many people have seen, and he's wonderful in it, and it's called Safe Men. And it's Steve Zahn and oh God, now I can't think, why am I suddenly blanking on a name? You know, I love this guy. He won an Oscar for, what's the Three Billboards in Ebbing down in Missouri? Oh my God, I can't think of his, he's in Galaxy Quest, for God's sake. I'm suddenly blanking on his name.
I know, Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell,
yes.
And Steve Zahn are the two leads.
Oh, Mark, yeah, Ruffalo. I do know that
Mark Ruffalo's in it. Michael Lerner plays a mobster called Big Fat Bernie Gale. And and Paul Giamatti, always wearing a tracksuit, he's called Pork Chop. He's like the kind of henchman for Michael Lerner. And Michael Lerner has a son who's going to get bat mitzvahed, and his name is Little Big Fat. And it's a great, great little indie comedy about these two guys that get roped into being safecrackers, or they're going to get their legs broken kind of thing.
Okay, and, yeah.
It's really fun, and Giamatti's just wonderful in it. He's great in it. Unless, of course, you don't like Paul Giamatti. But it's just a good movie all around, if anybody can find it. It's tough to find.
Okay. Well,
so there you go. Well, I just wanted to
set things right and give praise.
But can I just ask, were people like talking about him on the page, and then somebody kind of said, hey, sorry, I know you don't like it, but I really like him in this or something? Or how did it?
Yeah, I think, and it's been a couple of weeks because we haven't taped in a while, and I'm not 100% sure if I could find the context, but I just remember thinking like, ooh, no, this has no venom in it,
right,
so to speak. You save that for
Michael Paré.
You better believe I do.
Save the venom not for Giamatti. There's much more at stake. No. All right, well, there you go. Yeah,
like William Sanderson. Oh, sorry.
I certainly don't think when we have these conversations that you walk away and I think, oh, he just despises these things he doesn't like or whatever.
Oh, no. But I wondered how I came across. You know, sometimes you aren't very self-aware. Meaning me, you know. So I just want to be 100% sure on that one.
Right. Well. If Paul Giamatti's listening, I think you've made amends, certainly. Remember, he's a big Planet of the Apes fan, huge Planet of the Apes fan. I bet if you met him, you guys would really get along because he loves horror and sci-fi and Planet of the Apes.
Of this, I have no doubt. He actually, from everything I've heard, he's a sweet man. Just, you know, this is not important.
No, just not your cup of tea. Not your cup of tea.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. Yeah. Well.
All right. So I would have to give you the gauntlet of you won this round, Lindsay.
Yes.
And I do that because it was almost a psychological battle for me.
I was. It was like my Gitmo for you.
Yeah. Because you got at my heart, because this is Gerry Anderson, and that. We wouldn't be talking if it weren't for Gerry Anderson.
True.
So, yeah, true. That sort of.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I had that on Region 2 DVD, and I was so eager to get into all those extras on there and how are these things. There's another one he did. What's the one he did with Brian Blessed?
I think it's like Edge of, what is that called? Like Edge into the Infinity or something. I was just thinking of that, where it is beautiful to look at, but it is so damn dull.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's I can only imagine running into that as a kid and going like, this Space 1999 is boring.
It's like if all we got for shows that were genre related in the US through the set, if all we ever got was Salvage One,
One followed by Quark.
Salvage, but Quark at least was sci-fi. You were like,
yeah, it's true.
One was like, are they gonna go to the moon? What's he building? How long is this gonna take? Why is it Andy Griffith? What is taking so long? You know, Starlog did like a TV special magazine. It made the cover, and
it's still available.
You're like, what? It's still available for mail order. There's one guy sitting in the warehouse for Starlog that's still open. They still have a bunch of Nostromo caps and those little metal miniatures from Wrath of Khan and 8,000 copies.
Movies,
of
nobody one. Like the hideous Sun Demon soundtrack.
And 70,000 copies of the Salvage One super special.
That's still available.
Should we shut the warehouse down? No. This is going to be the year. This is going to be the year that Salvage One makes a comeback. You watch. Any day now, those things are going to be.
You have a gas can behind you. Don't pay no attention.
Just
for the lawnmower.
Keep the ad. Keep the ad in the. In the back of Fangoria. We're gonna get rid of these things. Don't you worry. This is the year. So there you go. Well, I hope you all learned something. And always, our commentary does not represent the feelings and opinions of the people who made those shows. We want to be clear. These are our opinions. And well,
I don't really hate, like, it didn't work, but good for, like, I'm glad these exist.
Oh, yeah. How wonderful is it that you can just, the stuff that, you know, you traded behind buildings and brown paper bags.
Oh, yeah.
That it's all out there now. You can find this stuff.
And you know what? I'm most of the time, because I like bad movies. Most of the time, it's sort of like the experience can be not unlike walking through a car wash. You know, they're just like, oh, that was horrible. But I'm glad there's another car wash. I'm glad I found another one to walk through. And that's what I feel like when I go online and I find a busted TV pilot. It's fun to take them apart. It's just amazing.
It is. I'll admit that most of the time I will sit there and make my way through whatever it is, or a movie that I suddenly found on Amazon Prime. Like, what is this? But there are plenty of times where I just suddenly, I like slap myself in the face and go, come on, snap out of it. What are you doing? Why are you going to finish this movie? Turn it off.
Okay.
You do not need to see how this turns out.
Mm-hmm. My wife calls that the free sub.
The free sub.
You know that that Seinfeld where Elaine's got like 11 of the 12 for a free sub and they're terrible, but she just wants the card to get the free sub. My wife always says, no, I need to get, like, you know, we were watching Sharks Out of the Moon. She's like, I need to get my free sub. And that is, you know, a wonderful allegory for basically, like, I know it's crap, but I want that crap.
Like, yeah, you do. There's some where you go, I've come this far. I'm gonna finish this so I can. And this goes into why I watch certain things that I know I'm probably not going to like this. But you know what? If I'm going to bitch about it, I have to at least be aware of it, see it. And so I probably watch more things that more things that I'm probably sure I'm not going to like than I should. So that I can, you know, nominated things and go, okay, well, I'll go. And then every now and then you come out the other side and go, oh, that was actually really good. That was much better than I expected. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a lovely surprise. But I love the feeling of when it comes up and you go, nope, saw it. Come on. It was, and I'm able to say it with authority instead of just, I thought it was going to be bad. So I have a bit of that sickness as well. But
yeah, anyway, right.
These were a couple of, you know, hope you enjoyed that and an expert analysis of space cop shows. We're only
going to. And you know what? I think we should come up with themes for the next few of these, because I really enjoy this. It's a passion of mine. And obviously, we've droned on and on about this. So this works. I think the next theme we should try and either get people to vote on or figure out between.
Yeah, that's a great idea. If people want to pick a couple or one, if you want to pick one pilot that you think is, you know, worthy of analysis, good or bad.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because there's I mean, I like stuff too. That's like, why didn't that become a show? You know, that should have worked. Do you remember the pilot for Global Frequency?
No.
You remember the comic Global Frequency?
No.
I think it was Warren Ellis. And I think they only made like maybe 20 issues or so or something.
Oh.
But it was like an anthology, like each issue was different. And it was, you know, you'd start in one and, you know, husband, wife, two kids, it's Sunday dinner and everything's going well. Or no, maybe you have like an incident prior to that. And the next scene would be that the family together having dinner. So, and then the phone rings and the husband, you know, picks it up and it says, you're on the Global Frequency. Yeah. He's got to hang up the phone, leave his family right that moment, jump in the car and go to the rendezvous point. So there are all these agents that are scattered throughout the world that are needed for this larger conspiracy or these things that kind of happen. And, you know, whatever life that you had or whatever you were doing, you dropped what you were doing as soon as you got the call, and that's it. And each one only dealt with those characters in each issue. And they made a pilot with Michelle Forbes as like the one constant that was going to be in the series. And it was a really good pilot. And it never went to series. And it's, I'm sure it's on YouTube if anybody wants to find it. But I love stuff like that too. So send in your
You know what I think we should do? I think in the next episode we should encourage people to send in their ideas. But we should explore doing Irwin Allen reboot pilots.
Reboot? I wouldn't even know where to start with that. What reboot
pilots? I think Lost in Space has had several pilots.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Time Tunnel has had more really? Than one. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I have to tell you, I am not a Lost in Space guy. I
love it, but I agree with you too.
I don't get it.
Lost in Space came out, like, for me, you know, like, it's all when you get on the train, I guess, but I was like 10 when it came on TV, and I loved that first season.
Wait, what was on TV?
Lost in Space, like, for me, like,
Oh, you're saying when you first saw it.
Yeah.
I see, yeah. Yeah, it was probably around, I mean, I watched it for sure, because it was space, and there was a robot in it, and whatever, but I just was like, this is, you know, when does Star Trek come on? Basically,
you know what, that is true. And in fact, because I liked Lost in Space, and I was like putting a TV on like the top of the hi-fi and holding the antenna to watch it, my parents finally got basic cable. So I'm kind of like, you know, that got me access to Buffalo 29, which was the big UHF station in the area. And yeah, it was a show I liked, and also it was like it was getting less and less cool as it went along, you know what I mean? The camp was not my favorite at that age. It was
I know they cleaned it up as the show went on. It got more people and things like that, and you know, but I just, you know, a family in space, like, I didn't care. I wanted people punching each other and shooting lasers and stuff. And I just never got into it. I know a lot of people are, but it was just never my thing. I dig the, you know, danger. I dig all that.
Oh, it is gorgeous to look at.
Yeah. In fact, I had that toy. I want to say Trendmasters made one of those in the 90s.
Like the whole, they did
two different buttons, and it talked and lit up and everything. And I was working on a show called Real TV. It was in this big big newsroom kind of thing, and I was toward the back, and one guy brought his kid in one day, and he's hanging out back there. I was like, hey, how's it going? Where are you? And poor kid had nothing to do, and I like walked away at one point, and I came back, and the robot was gone. It's like, what the fuck took? And then I found the kid on the other side of the newsroom playing with the toy. I'm like, give me that. It's mine. Take it back. Pushed him down. He was like 7. No, I
didn't. He kicked him in the throat, right?
Yeah. I let him play with it for a little while. I'm like, but you know, it's got to go back on the desk. Okay, kid, I'll break your legs. But I had that thing, cause it was pretty cool. And, did the real voice and everything.
I don't remember the Japanese company that released them. Was it Discuda? Wind-ups. They did Robbie, and they did Lost in Space Robot, and they had they came in these wonderful little boxes.
Yeah. Sakuda or Masudaya? Was it?
Yeah, it might have been Masudaya.
Masudaya?
Yeah. Those are the two names that I recognize that was like big at hobby shops at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, maybe we'll do the Irwin Allen ones. That's not a bad idea.
Send in your
postcards and your letters, and let us know what you think.
Until next time, guys, be well.
Be well. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah. Cheers. Let me just stop recording.